So this is the first Dharma talk of the new year. So I want to kind of focus on the new year. You know, we had our ceremony last week on beginning anew. Many of you attended. There was a workshop yesterday for members on kind of how to create a life that is consciously directed by one's aspiration in life. But also, so I'm going to talk about that, but also I want to, there's a picture on the altar here. Earlier this week, a long-term member of our community from Southwest Florida passed, and we did focus on her at our full moon loving kindness meditation on Thursday. But just a cautionary tale. Her name was Catherine Aldridge, very fine woman. She lived in Pine Island with her husband. Used to come to our Naples Sangha. And she would always tell me she wasn't happy on Pine Island. They really had moved there. Her husband was an avid fisherman and sportsman and sort of liked that environment. She was more of a city woman from Miami. And she kept wanting to be closer. Closer to the Sangha, to the community, but it didn't work out. And then a number of years ago, her husband came down with cancer. And so she spent a number of years taking care of him and all the ramifications of that as you go through treatments and relapses and remissions and anyhow. And then, so again, her ability to practice the way she wanted to, you know, wasn't happening once again for her. But then a couple of years ago, he passed, and she said, oh, now is my time. So she sold her house on Pine Island. She moved here to Tampa, rented an apartment down in Davis Island. And all of a sudden she found, even though she wanted to be here so much more often, she had very limited energy to practice. And it turned out she had a heart condition, a leaky valve. I went through various kinds of treatments for that, ended up having surgery a couple of weeks ago, and she was in rehab and she passed away on Friday. So the cautionary tale is what? There will never be ideal conditions to begin our practice. Many of us live with this sense. Well, when I get this together and that together, and I get all the things lined up just the way I want, then I'll have time to practice and devote myself more energetically to my spiritual life, to my transformative life. Everybody know what we're talking about? Yeah. You know, and that's fine, except for one significant problem. Impermanent. Everything is impermanent. You know, there's a fundamental teaching of the Buddha, and you've heard me say it. He said, you know, in the jungle, you know, the elephant's footprint is the biggest. And he said, in life, impermanence has the biggest footprint. You know, nothing is stable. Nothing is sure. Nothing is known, right? We are great planners, are we not? Yeah, we love to plan. And yet we act because, thinking that just because we write it down, that it's actually going to happen, you see? I mean, we laugh because it's so ridiculous, right? We plan, we think our life's going to unfold this way, and then this is going to happen, and that's going to happen, and then I'm going to be able to do this, then I'm going to be able to do that when I get this taken care of and that taken care of, right? But life isn't like that. And it's not only not like that for ourselves, but for everybody else in our life, right? So the fundamental instability of this life, you know, sickness, old age, and death, impermanence, up and down, like, dislike, things go well, things don't go well, they love us, they hate us, we come together, we part, you know, on and on. That's just the fundamental condition of life, right? There will never be ideal conditions to practice. There will never be the right time to practice. There's only one time. It is now. Right? We've all heard millions of times. Past, gone. Past doesn't exist. It's gone. Future hasn't come. Doesn't exist. The only thing that truly exists is now. Now, fortunately, our practice is not predicated on geographical place. You know, we don't have to be in a cave. We don't have to be in a monastery. We don't have to be, at a practice center, right? We can practice anywhere. And we can practice with everything. As lay people, we're lay people, that's what in Buddhism we're called lay people, we're householders. We live in life, we have the full catastrophe of life, you know. We have all the responsibilities and activities of life. Our life is our meditation hall. Our life is our meditation hall. And all the experiences of our life are giving us the opportunity to wake up. It does not matter at all what our life situation is, who we live with, what's going on, things are working, things aren't working, whatever. We can always learn to be what? Mindful. That's our fundamental practice, being present. Being present to what's going on around us, being present with what's going on inside us as a direct experience, not lost in thought, but as a direct experience, we can always learn to be present, more present to whatever's going on at home, in our relationships, at work, shopping, driving, right? Is there any reason we cannot be mindful and present? I mean, can anybody think of a good reason why we're, you know, fundamentally unable to be mindful in all the activities of our life? So that's a real question. I mean, can anybody come up with a good reason why we cannot be present, even to our suffering? What? Well, when you're sleeping, unless you're practicing dream yoga, yes, you have a little time off. So that's good news, isn't it? I can always practice being mindful, being present. Now, in our Buddhist tradition, mindfulness actually means more than just being present. Mindfulness actually, smriti, means being present with criteria. And this has to do with not only am I present internally, externally to life, but there's a certain way I want to show up in that present moment. Okay. That's also what we're very mindful of. Right? How do I show up in everything? Right? Do I show up with integrity? I'm aware. Do I show up with genuineness? I'm aware, I'm mindful. Do I show up with kindness, with compassion, with understanding, you know, with some degree of intelligence? You see what I'm saying? We are present, but we're present with criteria. Are my words helpful or not helpful, wholesome or unwholesome? Am I eating? Is what I'm eating, I'm mindful, I'm just not mindful that I'm eating. You know, I am mindful I'm eating a gallon of ice cream. Well, you know, you can get some credit for being mindful, okay? But you see, mindfulness without criteria can be kind of stupid. So we want to be mindful, but with criteria. That's why mindfulness is part of our transformative path. Right? We use mindfulness. See, mindfulness by itself can be used for many different things, can't it? Right? If I'm a thief, right, mindfulness can be very helpful. Being present can be very helpful, can't it? You see? So mindfulness has, by itself, can, you know, can be useful in many different ways. But in our tradition, we use mindfulness as part of our spiritual path, our path of healing and transformation. So learning, you know, it's not just being present to life, but being present to, and how am I showing up in this moment? Right? Am I living my values? Am I living my aspiration? Am I living my intention? Right? Or am I just recreating, endlessly recreating the past, endlessly creating all ways of being, all ways of doing, you see? So mindfulness is always available to us, no matter what's going on. Many of us, we study what are called the mind trainings. One of the mind trainings is take adversity as the path of awakening. I've talked about that in the past. What? You know, many people go, what? You know, adversity, obstacles, challenges is the path to awakening? How could that possibly be? Aren't they supposed to be obstacles and challenges that prevent me from waking up? No. They're actually more helpful to us than when things are easy and good. Because when things are easy and good, what do? What? We're lazy. We coast. Yeah, things are good. I don't need to practice. Yeah, things are good enough. I don't need to practice. You see, but when we're in an aversive situation, it challenges us. Difficult people challenge us. Difficult situations challenge us, right? To let go. Do we like to let go? No. Right? We don't like to let go. We like to be right. We like to manipulate situations so they go our way. We like to manipulate people so they do what we want. Right? We don't like adversity, do we? We don't like it when things aren't working our way, when life is not working out our way. But from the point of view of practice, very helpful. Kind of raises the bar. Can I enter even difficult situations with an open mind, a calm mind, not letting go of my intelligence, not letting go of my aspirations, how I want to be in this life, you see? So for those of us who maybe are going through difficult times, and in life, it's like that, right? Sometimes things are good, sometimes things aren't so good. Sometimes things flow and work, sometimes things are just sort of rocky, right? But we want a spiritual life that is able to incorporate life. You know, that is one of the great blessings of the Zen tradition. It's very grounded, it's very real, right? It's not about creating some kind of spiritual environment. See, many of us hope, if I can just get my spiritual environment correct, you know what I mean? Get things just the way I want it, get all the right people in my life, wear the right clothes, smell the way, you know what I mean? Get the whole thing, you know, then I'll be what? A real spiritual person. But that's not a spiritual person. That's a control freak. We want a spiritual life that's robust, that we can take with us to work, that we can take with us into our relationships, that we can take with us into society, as messed up as it seems to be, and be clear, be conscious, right? So mindfulness always available, presence always available, and a genuineness in how we show up in the world is always available to us. There are no obstacles to that. Well, that's not true. There is one major obstacle. Does anybody know who that is? Yes, yeah, so, yeah. And when we understand that the only obstacle I have to becoming the kind of person I want to be is this one, and my attachment and my clinging and my unconsciousness about this one, right? When we get this one on board, right? When we get this one on board with our spiritual life, our spiritual direction, our healing, our transformation, whichever, however you, you know, however it resonates in your mind, then we can move ahead in our spiritual life. Again, the unique thing about a spiritual life as opposed to a kind of a worldly life is not that, you know, spiritual people don't have families and jobs and retirement funds, you know what I mean, don't pay mortgages. It doesn't mean that, and worldly people do. It means for a worldly person, that's all there is. But a spiritual person knows, no, there's a whole inner dimension to life, right, that one can cultivate, that one can live from, and that one can relate to the world from. That's a spiritual person, okay? And again, you know, so we want our spirituality to be something that's, again, robust, strong, capable, mindful, presence. The next thing that we all practice is concentration, right? So again, in our community, whether you're a member, a non-member, a beginner, been doing it for 20 years, whatever it is, we practice mindfulness with criteria, and we practice concentration. Now, what does concentration mean? Like we just did meditation, right? And we concentrate on our bodies, we concentrate on our breath. I mean, there are many, many, many practices. But basically, concentration means we are taking the energies of the mind and we are sort of bringing them together. We're unifying them by, you know, by learning that we can focus the energies of the mind in a direction, in any direction we want to put it. That's a great power of mind. So it's important that we understand a concentrated mind isn't the ability to focus on that flower single-mindedly for 30 minutes without a thought, you know? That's a certain kind of state that one can get into. But I think it's much more important for us as lay people, since we don't live in meditation centers and aren't cultivating a mind like that, that we learn to have a concentrated mind, right? So anything we do, we learn to take the energies of mind and focus it. So when we walk, we are concentrated on what? On walking, right? When we're sitting in meditation, whatever your spiritual practice is, whatever your meditative practice is, that's what you're concentrated on, right? When you're brushing your teeth, that's what you're concentrating on. When you're talking to somebody, they're the object of your concentration. Right? When you're listening to somebody, listening is the object of your concentration. So learning to live with a unified mind is very helpful, right? And no matter what practice you're doing, whether you're doing breath practice, mind practice, whether you're doing compassion practices, whether you're doing loving kindness practices, whether you're looking into the nature of your mind, whatever practice you're doing, whatever you're becoming more patient, more kind, more loving, whatever you're doing, right? we have to concentrate on that. You see? Because if we're not concentrated, we will be on it for how long? Anybody find that without a concentrated mind, it's very hard to accomplish anything? Right? Because we're done. And then we're over here. Oh, I'm going to remember. No, I'm over here. You see? We set our goals and intentions in the morning, and then we remember them about 9 o'clock in the evening. Why? Because we haven't developed the ability to stay concentrated, focused. You know, many of us are very good at, work, right? Because there is consequences for not being concentrated, aren't there? Not only could you screw up, but you could get fired, right? So there's reasons that we are willing in those situations, sports, other kind of situations, where we're willing to stay concentrated, and we know it brings benefits. So we need to learn to be concentrated in our spiritual life, in our transformative life, so we stay focused, right? So this practice of mindful concentration. Mindfulness reveals the present, reveals what's going on. Concentration keeps the mind focused and attentive. So it's so important, right? I mean, you see who runs everything. So is this better?
So far,
yes. So again, whether we're beginners, whether we're advanced, mindfulness with criteria, concentrated mind, we're all practicing these practices. Okay? And they're essential. And I'm saying this again because this is the first talk of a new year. And many of us, we have this habit, good habit, end of one year, beginning of a new year, we set our intentions, we make our vows, we're going to, this year I'm going to do it differently. Right? Anybody said that to themselves so far? This year I'm going to do it differently. Yeah. But without mindfulness and concentration, it is very difficult to follow through. I mean, it's not that we don't mean well. Most of us are well-meaning people, right? The trouble is we don't have the technology, the tools, to bring our intentions into fruition, which I think over time gets frustrating to people. I think that's one of the reasons that people, get frustrated in their spiritual path, why people move around from one spiritual path to another, because they really don't experience the fruits that they want. But unfortunately, the fruits only come to us when there's mindfulness and concentration, and then I'll talk about insight in a minute. That's when the fruits come to us. And that takes time. It's another problem that I think people have following a transformative path, that we like short attention span, quick results, right? That's kind of our cultural way of being these days, and so you can't take a pill for this, right? You can't take a pill for this. These days I hear from people, edibles are like sort of big in some parts of society. Edibles are big, giving people experiences. But those are just experiences. All experiences, if they're going to have any meaning, need to be integrated into life. What is life? This. Work. Relationships. Carrying water, chopping wood, washing the dishes, right? All the things of daily life. You know, many people when you ask them how they're doing, they talk about their practice, right? how their practice is. But in truth, my friends, our practice is our life. It's our life we want to transform. The practices help us, our means to an end, but the end is becoming a certain kind of person, right? So these are all, we practice all these things so we can show up in the world with some kind of dignity, with some kind of nobility, with some kind of clarity, some kind of integrity. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's what the world is crying out for. I mean, you know, you read the paper and you look at our leaders and they're like what? Emotional midgets. Forgive that. It's not really strong, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like, you know, no wonder people are turned off. You know what I mean? I think we lack, you know, people to look up to. I think especially younger people have, you know, people to look up to. You know, and a lot of times what people are end up looking up to are what? Celebrity kind of people, right? Stars of this and that. But, you know, these people may have talents, right? But to look upon them as a kind of person I want to be, we have to look a little deeper, you see. And so, I think being part of a spiritual tradition gives us models. Gives us models of great teachers and masters, men and women, you know, practitioners who have transformed themselves and who do lead noble, selfless, wise lives, you know, who fundamentally want to show up in a way in this world of doing good. Doing good. And doing good, it doesn't mean like, you know, big things. Doing good means like just doing good, wherever you are, whoever you're interacting with. Am I aware? Yeah, what, you know, whatever the interaction is, even with just somebody waiting on you somewhere, you know, how can I bring value to this? You know, everything. How can I bring value to this interaction? Create some meaning. Right. So mindfulness, concentration, and then the third, and this is all really the meditative side of the Buddhist path, is insight. Okay, insight. Looking deeply, Thich Nhat Hanh calls, looking deeply. We cannot just live life on the surface. We have to look under to see what's really going on. I mean, a lot of what this means is within ourselves. We're mindful. We're aware. We're practicing. But we keep running into him or her, right? Can you say it? You know, even though we have good intentions to do things differently, to be differently, he or she keeps showing up without any warning, right? Our habitual ways of responding to life, dealing with life, our habitual kind of afflictive emotions, all the stuff I'm talking about, that those old patterns, you know, that habit energy that we've just, and so at a certain point, we need to look under the surface of our life to see what's driving. What's driving? It's obviously not me, right? Because if you asked me, I'm talking about the me up here, right? If you asked me, I would say, no, I don't want to be that way. I don't want to be angry. I don't want to be resentful. I don't want to keep ruminating about the past and stories. I don't want to keep worrying about the future. You know what I'm saying, right? I mean, up here, we're clear. There's somebody else in there. Why don't we just all stop a moment and acknowledge there's somebody else in there? And they're living life from a totally different agenda than we are. So just close your eyes. Pregnant pause. Everybody know who we're talking about, right? This part of ourselves needs to be acknowledged. Because the truth is, for many of us, it is the more powerful part of ourselves. Because it can hijack the wheel anytime it wants. And so it's important that when we practice this path of healing and transformation, we practice with all of us, all the parts of ourselves are practicing together. And so we need to look deeply underneath the surface as we see these continued patterns, these continued responses, these continued reactions to life, that in our kind of conscious moments, we know not good, not producing happiness and well-being within myself or in my relationships, not good. Sabotaging, undermining. So we want to look deeply to discover, uncover all of us. And so our practice includes all of us. Is that clear? See, the problem is that we're sort of in the early stages of Buddhism coming to America. It's happening very quickly, because everything's happening very quickly in our culture. So, I mean, you know, when you look at the spread of Buddhism, you know, from northern India all throughout Asia and over, you know, almost to Greece and Central Asia, and you know what I mean? It was centuries. The integration, coming into China, 300-400 years coming into the culture. America, you know, we quick, very quick, because I think for, you know, because of the media and just the, you know, access to information, you know, how things happen, you know, immediately. So, so we are, and a lot of those of us who are attracted to Buddhism are attracted because the people who are coming to Buddhism tend to be thinkers, you know, people who think about life, right? We're introspective. We wonder, you know, yeah, we're able to go, things aren't working. Maybe I need to find something else. You see, we have good intellectual capacities, right? We search, we look. The problem is we think intellectual understanding is the same thing as living, right? So the problem is our search is very intellectually driven. We understand up here something's not right, or I'm not getting the satisfaction meaning, or things are problematic. We read, we listen, we go, this is a good path, really sounds, you know, I get it. These are good, you know, good practices, they make a lot of sense, they're effective. We get it up here. And for many of us, we practice up here. You see? So we get lots of good transformation going on up here. We can talk a good game, right? The trouble is, there's a lot going on down here. Is that clear? In Buddhist psychology, Yogacara, we call this our storehouse consciousness. For those who've been around when I've given talks on Yogacara philosophy, psychology, you know. The analogy is what? Eggplant. Everybody know a nice, good-sized eggplant? Okay, you know that little part at the top that's kind of green, you know, it's the top, I don't know, you know what I'm talking about? right? That's our conscious mind, okay? The eggplant, that's our what's called the storehouse consciousness. Okay. And the storehouse is the receptacle that stores all the past thoughts, feelings, perceptions, formations, traumas, memory, you know, it's all storehouse. Okay. So can you see, if we're only practicing up here, can you see why transformation is not occurring? Because we're not acknowledging this, that, you know, it's sort of like living in a nice house, you know, but the closets and the attics and the basement are just full of junk, right? But the first floor looks good. Just don't open the closets. You see what I'm saying? Or just don't go into that room. It sounds funny, but that's the way many of us are, you see. We look good. You know, we've developed, most of us, you know, we kind of develop decent social skills. We know how to present well. We know how to get by. Everybody know what I'm talking about? You know, so we're good at that. So we're good at kind of not acknowledging the other parts of ourselves, which again are often very powerful because they're very, a lot of them are deep and old and, you know, I've just got a lot of history. Does everybody know what I'm talking about? Okay. So again, this is where we get it at first. You understand? This is good. We have good minds, good intellects, but we have to practice, and we have to practice with all of us. And so this deep looking underneath is also very essential. That's why in the Buddhist meditative tradition, we talk about smriti, mindfulness, samadhi, concentration, vipassana, insight. And in the Buddhist meditative tradition, it is said that only insight produces change, real change. In other words, one can develop good kind of clarity and stability and calmness of mind through mindfulness and concentration, right? But if we don't deal deeply and transform more deeply, we'll never be really free. And we want to be free. And one of the things we want to be free of is our conditioning. You see, we don't want to be, because if you think about it, would everybody think that I had the most wonderful upbringing? I was raised by the most enlightened people who only nurtured the best in me. And all my family and friends and school experiences only brought out the best in me. I mean, if you answer yes to that, you are very lucky, right? You know, most of us, it was a mixed bag, right? Some of us, it was a little bit on the more difficult side. Okay. So that's, you know, that. You know, and that just continue. We are conditioned beings. We have been conditioned by life. And especially when we were young, very unsophisticated up here, very open, you know, very dangerous time to be a child, right? Because on the one hand, you don't have much experience. You're very open. Your cognitive capacity is very limited. So you're very open. You just take it in, right? And yet the influences around us may not have been the most wholesome. And for many of us, that's when we formed much of the way we operate in the world. Does everybody understand what I mean? So that's our, in Buddhism, we call that conditioning. So another way to look at spiritual practice is, I want to decondition my conditioning. And now, what do I want to do? I want to condition my mind, my mind, the way I want it to be. So this is the process, you see. You know, what's happened up to now, whatever that is, You know, wherever you are in your journey in life, whatever it's been, that's happened, right? I mean, that just happened. It's not a big, you know, it's just, that's what is. That's what happened. That cannot be changed, what happened. But fortunately, whatever happened is over. And right now, in this moment, this is a fresh moment. And if I am conscious, if I am aware, if I'm mindful and concentrated, insightful, I can condition this moment, this action of my body, speech, and mind to produce a different future for myself. I mean, in a nutshell, that's what we're doing, you see. We're acknowledging our conditioning, storehouse consciousness, holding it all. We're undergoing a process that allows us to heal and transform, understand all that, as well as to learn much more wholesome and happier ways of being in this world through the actions of our body, speech, and mind. And it's a process, right? But again, it's a process, you know, in Buddhism, we say the lotus only grows in the mud. Maybe many of you have heard that, the lotus only grows in the mud. I mean, that's very powerful. It's saying it is in the mud of our life, as it was, in that muck, we are gonna grow beautiful flowers. We're not gonna grow them out here. We're not gonna grow them in the air. We're gonna grow them right here. We're gonna take, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh also uses the analogy of composting, right? It's a great analogy. He says, you know, if you take all your kitchen scraps, right, and you just put them in a bucket, you know, what's gonna happen? No, you won't. Anybody just take their peels and take all their garbage and just put it somewhere and just let it be? What's going to happen? It's going to rot. It's going to stink. It's going to be foul. Right? But if you know how to compost, if you know how to work with it, you can create soil. And so I thought that was a brilliant analogy, you know. So many of us have kind of let our garbage kind of sit and rot, forgive the analogy, for too long, okay? And now we want to, you know, again, another way of looking at spiritual life is we're composting, we're learning, oh, I can take that garbage and I can transform it. I can take my suffering, and by using compassion, kindness, understanding for myself, I can grow kindness, compassion, understanding within myself. I say, I'm not going to grow it out here in some alternative universe. It's directly here. How I relate to my own suffering is giving me the ability to become a different kind of person. And if I learn to be understanding, accepting, compassionate, insightful, etc., with my own garbage, my own suffering, oh, I've learned something very essential that I can then bring where? Into my life, into my relationships with others. I can become a compassionate, kind, loving, insightful person. I mean, how does that sound? But, you know, we don't have to go to school for that. This is what the meditative process is. It's our own process. We learn. Okay, so insight. Now, again, in Buddhism, all these things have multiple meanings, right? And so, you know, if you're familiar with our community, you know, many of you know, we have three paths, our mindful living path, our Dharma path, our wisdom path. And again, everybody in all these paths are practicing mindfulness, concentration, insight, right? For some, on the mindful living path, it's more daily life, it's more emotional healing, right? It's more psychological healing, so we get healthy. And as we go along, you know, insight has more meanings. You know, I mean, for the Buddha's enlightenment, his insight was into the real nature of life, the nature of mind, how things really are, beyond the world of self and duality. We won't get into all that. So, I mean, deep looking and insight has multiple meanings. And in our community, we practice it in different ways, but it's still always the same tool, learning to look under the surface, not accepting things at a superficial level. Yeah, I don't know what else to say. So it's a new year. Yes. Yeah, so yeah, that's good. So let's open it up. All right, so I've been rambling, Dharma rambling here for about 45 minutes. If anything, you know, you any questions? Brian, people raise their hand. Is that what you want?
Those online, you can just type in the question, and then I'll relay it to Fred.
And people in the hall, just raise your hand, and a mic will be passed to you. It always happened.
Okay. So you're saying for insight, the best way to begin that would be more practices of meditation, quieting the mind?
Yeah, so it's like this. So imagine, and again, these are very traditional analogies, right? You're in a lake. You ever been in a lake? Mm-hmm. And you'd like to see the bottom. So you walk into the lake, and what happens when you walk into the lake?
Feel the bottom.
You feel the bottom, but you can't see the bottom because you've been stirring up the sediment, right?
Yep.
Okay, but you'd like to say, gee, I heard there's some interesting fish in here or something. So you've got to let it settle down. So that's why the mindfulness and the concentration help settle down the mind, right? Open it up, a little more clarity, not so all over the place, right? Learning to let thoughts come and go, you know, okay? Mm-hmm. When the mind is calm and stabler, then looking into it, directly into it, is much easier. Is that really your question?
Yes, I think.
Well, I mean, is there anything else you want to say? I mean, so you're asking in relationship to what?
So for like insight, when I meditate and my mind's clear, mm-hmm. I don't obviously get answers inwardly while I'm clear, but would you say they tend to rise because now I'm more, am I making any sense?
Yeah, no, you're making sense. So it's a really good question. So I would, you know, so oftentimes when you talk to people, people say, oh, I meditate, right? Now, to me, that is meaningless because there are so many types of meditation and so many meanings that people have, I have no idea. So I always have to ask them, oh, what does that mean? What are you actually doing? And some people say, well, I just sit down and I just focus on my current problems and issues and look for solutions. Okay. They call that meditation. And but that's not Buddhist meditation, okay? So in Buddhist meditation, if you're like, you're coming here, right? And we're practicing like we practice today, developing a certain skill, right? Learning to calm, stabilize the mind by focusing on the body breath. So that's what we're doing. Okay. Now, with that clearer mind, what's your name?
Michelle.
Michelle may go, my mind's pretty clear, you know. So maybe I want to take that clarity and begin to look at some pattern within my life. But I really want to kind of see what's underneath that. What's really going on with Michelle? Mm-hmm. You know, the one down here, mm-hmm. You see. But I wouldn't mix it up because you could too easily let it become more of a psychological process, your meditation, unless unless that's your intention. You see?
Yes.
But we have to be careful because, you know, there's a problem with meditation, this kind of single-pointed meditation. Does anybody know what the problem is? There's a fundamental problem with it. You know what? It's boring. Let's be very honest. It's boring. For people whose minds are used to going, 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 stimulate, 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 right? You know, as my grandson says, it's meditation's boring. It's like, boring, you know, nothing going on, you see? So we have to understand that there's a kind of a natural, you know, it's like a kind of uncomfortableness until we really kind of get it and settle in, you know, just kind of, you know, settling into a place where there's really nothing going on and everything is kind of calm and peaceful and stable. We're that crazy, by the way. That feels unusual to us. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't feel comfortable to us. You know, it's like, oh, I got to get back on the computer, you know, and you see, you know what I mean? Or I got to start thinking about something. I got to get some stimulation going here. So we have to understand, you know, I mean, that's you know, maybe in one way, our mind is different from our ancestors, you know, different time, right? So that's why I'm sort of saying, don't just watch the mind that doesn't say, oh, now I'm calm, peaceful. Now I'll just think about that. Or now we'll think about that. Because one of the skills that we're learning in meditation is I don't have to be the slave of my thinking mind. Just because a thought is arising, it doesn't mean I have to follow it. I can just let it go because thoughts just come and go. I can just look right at it. I can just stop, look right at it, and it disappears. Wow. You know? Is that helpful?
Yes.
Thank you, Michelle. Yes.
We have two questions online. The first, mm-hmm, is from Anthony. I think you kind of addressed it, but see if there's anything else you want to say.
It's, okay.
Anthony says, please give an example of how to look deeply versus the analyzing we were taught in this culture.
So again, you mean sort of at the different levels. So, right. So at one level, you know, a more traditional psychological analytical way is we see the roots of some sort of pattern in us, right? We see, oh, well, this is the, you know, I can see in my family upbringing or the way I was treated or what was going on. I can see these are the roots of this pattern within me. Okay. So that's sort of like a psychological insight. An example of taking the same thing at a deeper level is to go, what was that based on? Why has situations, experiences that happened 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, why am I still living them? Well, let me look more deeply into my mind. Can I really find something called the past in any real way? And at a deeper level, you see, we act as if there's been a continuous me, a continuous self or ego. Like there was a self-ego me back there, you know, 20, 30 years ago, and that has continued as one solid object carrying its stuff with it right up to the present. But what if that's not really the way it is? What if there actually is not a continuous whole self that continues over time? But what if actually what goes on in life is just an endless unfolding of moment-to-moment experiences which, if you look deeply, are not connected? What if the way I connect them is what in Buddhism is called delusion? Wow. It's like that which I thought controlled me, my past, doesn't exist in any real way. that it's only continuing to affect me because I have not known that and I continue to hold on to it and identify with it. So anyhow, that's a deeper way of looking. The other question.
The second question is from Libby. Mm-hmm. And she says, the logo of Plum Village contains three words, Smriti, Samadhi, and Prajna. Mm-hmm. How is Prajna related to Vipassana and deep looking?
Yeah, so exactly. So what she's referring to is the practice of insight, the practice of looking deeply produces wisdom. Okay. And it is only wisdom, insight, understanding, which liberates us, frees us, which is the goal. It doesn't mean that through the practices of mindfulness, through the practices of concentration, we cannot get benefits, right? We can get lots of good benefits from having a more mindful, concentrated, focused mind, right? A mind that is more wholesome, that's more focused on wholesomeness. It's focused on nourishing itself with things that are truly nourishing, right? We can get lots of benefits, but in Buddhism is based on only one thing, the Buddha's enlightenment. It's not based on any kind of divine revelation at all. It's based on a human being's willingness to look deeply into his own mind, to look deeply into the human condition, and to be enlightened as to what's really going on. It is only when in the Buddha's enlightenment that he was called the Buddha. Before that, he was called Siddhartha, right? He was just ordinary guy, just one of the many kind of yogis, wandering about northern India, following spiritual paths, right? Buddha means awakened one. It was only in his awakening, right, that he was given the title Buddha, awakened one. Right. Now, for the next 40, 50 years, he taught all kinds of things, all kinds of people, all kinds of levels of teaching. And all of that came out of what? His enlightenment. His enlightenment that tore away the veils of ignorance and allowed him to see very clearly what was going on, which also meant what was going on within every human being who came before him. So therefore he could teach them and help them. Right? He was awake. Right? So like when we're asleep at night, there's not much we can do, right? We're asleep. And really all we do, which has any kind of meaning beside hopefully nourishing our body, is we're dreaming. But our dreams are kind of crazy, aren't they? And yet when we're in the dream, we think they're real, don't we? So not only are we asleep, but we're having experiences while we're asleep that we think are real. And we have feelings. We're happy, we're sad, we're angry, we're scared, right? Based on the dream that we think is real. We're asleep. We don't know what's really going on. We don't know it's just a dream, do we? We only know it's a dream when we what? Wake up. So another word for enlightenment is awakening. We wake up. We wake up out of the dream. We see what's really going on. So that's prajna, that's wisdom, capital W. Are the kids coming in today? So the kids will be, we have a family program, so kids are gonna come in, we all are happy to see them. They usually have a much better time than we do. Yes, wait.
My question is like a kind of technical occurrence type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're talking about when you look at a thought, it disappears. And that's been incredibly helpful. It's, but in terms of, like you're talking about prajna, how, is it one of those things that, like, if you have, like, you something arises and you look at it and then you, it either disappears and then at some point maybe.
So it's not a technique. We don't want to reduce it. It's a knowing.
Okay.
It's a knowing, right? I often use the analogy of being a kid, right? You often have thoughts and feelings that are scary. You think there's somebody under the bed. You think there are monsters in the closet. Is that true? Anybody can remember? You know, you have all those fears, right? And often your parents will come in and they'll turn on the light and they'll show little Alex. They'll take, you know, look under the bed, nothing there. Open the closet door, nothing there, right? And so Alex goes back to bed. He may want his mommy and daddy to lay with him a while because he's still afraid. But if he goes through that process, over time, he will know. There's nobody under the bed. There's nobody in the closet. Even if that crazy thought arises, you would easily dismiss it because you know. You're not fooled. Right? So it's a knowing. It's not a technique. Just you're not fooled anymore by your thoughts, because you know they're not your thoughts. I mean, how many thoughts have you had since we started here at 9 o'clock? How many thoughts? Anybody have more than three? How many of those thoughts did you consciously direct to come into your mind? Zero. I mean, that's really what's going on. Do they just come and go? Why we claim them as ours and we make such a big deal about them? Well, that's another Dharma talk. Okay? Thank you, everyone. Happy New Year.